For more than 150 years, Americans have observed Memorial Day, though it's been known under different names along the way. While the name has changed and new wars and conflicts have come along, the intent remains the same, to honor and remember those who have died in service to their country. And Memorial Day has its roots in one of the bloodiest conflicts in our history, the Civil War. Our next guest joins us to talk about the history of the holiday. Kenneth C. Davis is an author and historian. He's the author of the Don't Know Much About History series, and his latest book is More Deadly Than War, The Hidden History of the Spanish Flu and the First World War. Ken, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Great to be back with you. Thank you for having me on this very, very special day in American history.
And Ken, I know before we dig into the history, I know you want to make a point to the public about, you know, remembering that it's not just any old three-day weekend. Can you talk about that?
Oh, absolutely. Look, most of us think about us, except this year. Obviously, we're in an extraordinary moment in American history. For the most part, when most people think Memorial Day, they're thinking beach, swimsuit sales, or mattress sales, even worse. Look, it's the first weekend of the summer. I get that for most of us. It's a wonderful time, but it really is the most solemn day on the American national calendar. It is a day to honor not just veterans, not just those who served, but specifically those who gave the last full measure of devotion, as Lincoln put it so memorably in the Gettysburg Address. So it is a special holiday that we should understand. It was very divisive and partisan in its roots, and it's changed a lot over 150-odd years, but we must really understand what it's about today.
Well, let's dig back now into the early history. What are some of the earliest examples of people observing Memorial Day, something like Memorial Day, around this time of year?
Well, there were, the idea of going out and making a funeral oration to the dead soldier goes back to the time of Pericles in ancient Athens, one of the most famous speeches in Western civilization. And Lincoln certainly gave that speech in 1863 in Gettysburg, November 1863. During the Civil War, there are instances of people marking the graves of fallen soldiers while the war was still going on. But what we think of as the official beginning of Memorial or Decoration Day, as it was known when I was a kid, was May 30th, 1868. A very prominent American politician, Civil War general named General John Logan, was head of a fraternal organization called the Grand Army of the Republic. He declared that May 30th would be the day that people should go out and strew fresh flowers on the graves of the fallen soldiers. And he was referring specifically to the Union soldiers. This was seen as a Northern holiday. It was a holiday to celebrate the fact that these soldiers had died to save the Union and also to end slavery. That's why many of the Confederate states marked their own separate holiday. And so this became a day that was honored in late 19th century America because of the enormous losses. Of course, 600,000 at least American soldiers died in the Civil War. That number is probably a lot higher. By the way, in Wisconsin, the losses were quite extreme. Wisconsin sent more than 90,000 young men to fight in the South, and more than 12,000 of them never came back.
Yeah, let's detour to Wisconsin a little bit, and a lot of people know Camp Randall as the place to go see the UW Badgers football team play. The history of Camp Randall, though, a lot of some of its most prominent history goes back to the Civil War era. Can you talk about that?
That's right. It was begun as a camp which was meant for training those young men who were going off to war. Obviously, America did not have much of a standing army in 1861 when the war began. Lincoln begins the call for volunteers, and they start to pour in. Camp Randall in Wisconsin was begun as a training camp for the Union Army during the Civil War, and more than 70,000 recruits were trained there. Most interestingly, or in addition to that interest, and especially at this time, there were two things that set Camp Randall apart. First of all, it was there that the former governor's widow, Miss Cordelia Harvey, persuaded President Lincoln to establish hospitals. Very appropriate to be thinking about what healthcare workers do in the time of war and in a time of crisis at this moment. So Cordelia Harvey really gets a page in history on her own. But it was also a prisoner of war camp for Confederate prisoners, and more than 1,000 Confederate soldiers were being held there at one point, and some died, and they were buried at Camp Randall in what is known as the Confederate Rest.
And there was a controversy across the country on both sides about how the other side was treating prisoners of war. And ultimately, I gather the conditions at Camp Randall, even by the Union standards for Confederate captives, wasn't up to par. They ended up moving them to Illinois, I believe.
That's correct. We think of the Civil War, if you have a little bit of knowledge about it, you might have heard of Andersonville, the very notorious camp for Union soldiers in Georgia, which, by the way, after the war, Clara Barton was sent to Andersonville to try and find the missing in action and the missing soldiers there. Rather extra, we think of Clara Barton. Again, this connection of women and nursing in wartime is a very powerful one in the Civil War. Clara Barton begins this mission to find the lost soldiers of Andersonville. But there were Union prisoner of war camps spread across the North. And indeed, they did have standards for how to keep these prisoners. The situation at Camp Randall was a lot of not so much mistreatment or starvation or anything like that, which was the case in Andersonville, but a lot of disease, measles, mumps. These were the killers of the Civil War in large number. In fact, when we talk about the war dead from Wisconsin, that 12,000 number, probably 9,000 of them were people who died, men who died from disease rather than actual battle wounds.
We're talking to historian Ken Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History and other books in the Don't Know Much About series, talking about the history today of Memorial Day. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you have a question about the history of Memorial Day or Decoration Day, or if you want to tell us how you are observing Memorial Day maybe differently this year than you might have in the past. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Ken, let's get back into the early controversy. And this is a controversy in some ways that's lasted to this day. How do we remember the Confederacy? How do we remember soldiers who died on that side and in that cause? Can you talk about some of the early controversy over whether this holiday was meant to be Union side only?
It was clearly Union side only. And if you go back to General Logan's original, it was called an order, even though he was not a general at the time. He was actually in Congress at the time. But the head of this very, very powerful Union organization called the Grand Army of the Republic. And he issued this call for May 30th, 1868, and he said, "We should guard their graves with sacred vigilance. This should be a fitting tribute to the memory of the slain defenders. It's a day to honor those who died in the cause of ending slavery and opposing the rebellion." So it was clearly a partisan Union holiday, and that is why the former Confederate states began their own Confederate Memorial Days or Decoration Days. There's even records of the very first ceremony at Arlington, and for quite a while afterwards, they actually posted guards at Arlington to keep any Confederate families out on this day, because there are Confederate soldiers buried in Arlington, which, by the way, is also a vestige of the Civil War. It is built on land that was confiscated from the family of Robert E. Lee during the war, on the pretense of sorts of not paying taxes, but it was clearly retribution for Lee's leaving the Union, leaving the United States Army, and going to fight with Virginia and lead armies against the United States Army.
Now, I've wondered about the timing, why late May for Memorial Day, and if I have it right, it's because it's a good time to have lots of flowers?
That's it. It was selected apparently because it's the date on which the most flowers are in bloom in the north. Again, a hint that this is a northern holiday. And that was the idea, not just to think about these men, but to actually go to the graveyards and put fresh flowers on the graves. And that is why it was called Decoration Day, to decorate the graves. As time changed, Rob, you know, the Civil War generation got older. Most of them died off, certainly by the turn of the 20th century. This had already become something of a holiday picnic weekend. It was already the weekend where you didn't go to the cemetery anymore necessarily, or you went for a little while, but then you went and had a picnic. But something changed, of course, in 1918, and that is, of course, the United States' involvement in World War I. And it's really the losses in World War I, 102 years ago, ended November 11th, 1918, that revives the idea of Decoration Day or Memorial Day, not just as a Civil War holiday now, but a day to honor all those who died in service to the country, which is how we see it today, of course. And it was at that time that they decided to establish the Tomb of the Unknown at Arlington, which was dedicated in 1921. And the first soldier in that tomb, of course, was from World War I. Later to be added a World War II serviceman, and then a Korean War serviceman. A Vietnam-era serviceman was interred for some time. His body was later identified and later reinterred, I believe, near St. Louis.
We're talking to author and historian Ken Davis right now about the history of Memorial Day and its roots in the Civil War. We'll pick up at World War I coming up. Ken's the author of Don't Know Much About History and other books in that series. His latest book, by the way, we've talked about it on the show, More Deadly Than War, The Hidden History of the Spanish Flu and the First World War. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the history of Memorial Day, its origins, when it changed from Decoration Day to Memorial Day? If you have memories of the holiday you'd like to share, or if you'd like to tell us how you are observing Memorial Day in this different year where public gatherings aren't so likely, you can give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. Right now, we continue our conversation about the history of Memorial Day and its roots in the Civil War. Our guest is author and historian Kenneth C. Davis. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your thoughts, your observations on Memorial Day and how we mark it, or maybe don't mark it enough, as Ken says. He hopes you'll take some time to think about the meaning of the holiday. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Ken, let's talk about now how Memorial Day changed. You were starting to talk about this in World War I. Now, this, as opposed to the Civil War, this is something that kind of brought the nation together in many ways. Not everybody, of course, approved of World War I, but we, as a country, we're all on the same side here. How did that change the way we approached Decoration Day or Memorial Day?
Well, it did take it from this somewhat divisive partisan sense of a holiday and into a truly national holiday, because now the United States, of course, there had been other military engagements in between the Civil War and World War I, the most significantly the Spanish-American War, which was fairly short-lived and not a tremendous loss of lives. But with World War I, you have the loss of more than 100,000 American soldiers die in World War I, but that was in a very short period of time. The troops land in May of 1918. About a million American soldiers land in May of 1918. The war is over in November of 1918. About 100,000 men die in that period. And of course, many of them died from the Spanish flu, because the two things were completely connected. So there was a new sense of seeing this holiday as an opportunity, a possibility to remember all of America's losses in all of its wars. And that's when, as I said, it was determined that they should build the monument to the unknown soldier, a tradition that had existed in Europe long before then.
And the poppy flower is often associated with dead service members, the people who died in the line of duty. And this is around the time that happens during World War One.
That's right. It's also another World War One tradition that comes out of a poem that was written in 1915. Remember, the war starts in August 1914. The United States is not involved in it. A poem is written in 1915 by a young Canadian surgeon. His name just escaped me, but the poem is called In Flanders Fields. And it begins, "In Flanders Fields, the poppies blow between the crosses, row by row." It became internationally famous in the English-speaking world, of course. And a young American woman saw the poppy, the symbol of loss, of sacrifice, of death, of remembrance. She started to sell poppies to raise money for soldiers, widows, and orphans. And that was the beginning of what was called the poppy movement. It is as big and maybe bigger in Great Britain. Perhaps you saw at the 100th anniversary of the end of the war in 2018, there were poppies covering, you know, buildings in London and in France as well. So this is a very powerful symbol. I remember being a kid around this time of year, being in school. The veterans would come into our classroom and sell those little paper poppies to us. And, you know, you wanted to plunk down your quarter and buy a poppy from those veterans. It was a very, very meaningful thing. I don't know what the poppy movement is like this year. We can't really be out selling things on the street hand to hand, but it's still a powerful symbol of what war and loss really mean.
Oh, and our producers passed along the name John McCrae, the author of
In Flanders Field. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, JC, for passing that along. And now talk about how we've institutionalized, Ken, Memorial Day since then. As you said, you grew up celebrating it as Decoration Day still.
That's right. You know, when I was a kid, it was a really important holiday for us in my small town, as it is in many small towns. Partly because Memorial Day fell during the school year. So it was a school day off, but we didn't actually have a day off. It was the day that all the schools would march and participate in the town's parade. It was really much more important, much more significant in many ways than the 4th of July, which happened in the summertime when school was out. So this was, to me, and my father was a World War II veteran. Most of my uncles and other relatives had served in World War II. So this was a very powerful holiday for me growing up. The big change institutionally was that it became a national holiday in the 1960s. Before then, it was really up to governors to proclaim Memorial Day. In 1968, it becomes a national holiday. It's ultimately moved from the traditional May 30th date to the third Monday in May, and that is where it is today. The other big difference that I have to point out here is that the Vietnam War changed a lot of people's attitudes towards Memorial Day. During the 60s, Memorial Day, because the war was so unpopular, we had a different approach to thinking about it at the time. We couldn't disconnect the service of the soldiers from the unpopularity of the war. So Memorial Day fell into not disrepair or disrepute. It just didn't have the same resonance for a period during Vietnam than it did later. And it took a long time to get past that. I think it's only with the opening of the extraordinary Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, D.C., designed by Maya Lin, that we get some closure on that period. And those young men and women who went off to Vietnam and were not welcomed for their service when they came back finally felt that they were getting their appropriate recognition for what they had done.
I want to take our last minute, Ken, to ask you, you've mentioned the Spanish flu, you had a so-called Spanish flu, you had a book about the history there and how it intersected with the First World War. Just take a minute, any lessons or thoughts you have looking back just over a century at that epidemic to today?
Very powerful lessons and very perfect example of why history matters. The first lesson is the most important, perhaps. Spanish flu started in the spring, it came back worse in September. We have to keep that in mind right now. We cannot think that this thing is over in the next few months. The second thing is that it was really driven by propaganda, lies, and censorship early on in 1918. That's a very dangerous combination. We've seen that today as well. And two more quick points related. We can't ignore science. It's lethal to ignore science. They did in 1918 in Philadelphia. The warnings were don't have a parade to sell Liberty loans. They went ahead and did it. 200,000 people in the street. 2 days later, every hospital bed in Philadelphia was filled. And finally, the last point is misplaced priorities. Many cities like Philadelphia thought the war effort was more important than the public health. And that was one of the reasons that the Spanish flu was so deadly.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to Kenneth C. Davis, author and historian. He's the author of Don't Know Much About History and a number of other books in the Don't Know Much About series. His latest book, we were just touching on a little bit of it there, it was called More Deadly Than War: The Hidden History of the Spanish Flu and the First World War. He joined us today to talk about the Civil War roots of the Memorial Day holiday.